Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the MRC universe. We're trying to rouse ourselves from the utter boredom of this year's Oscars telecast. I was in one room darting in and out of the show. The Milwaukee Bucks were on. I'm not going to devote all my time to the Oscars. Meanwhile, out in the living room, Mrs. Graham was falling asleep on the couch. And she typically loves the glitz of the Oscars. Let's watch 4 hours of pre-show in gray dresses. No, I'll be in the other room watching the basketball. Anyway, I do get a kick out of some of these dresses. They're just like, what did you think? Laura Dern, what was that? Anyway, Mrs. Graham went to bed. She missed this weird bit where the actor Lil Rel Howery was quizzing the actors about how much they knew about the best song category at the Oscars, and specifically the black musicians. He was asking Daniel Kaluuya about Donna Summer in Last Dance from Thank God It's Friday, which was a disco movie. You don't think of that as an Oscar movie. They don't generally do that. I guess best song is an exception in those categories. But the weird part was it ended with Howery asking Glenn Close about the song Debut, Doin' Debut, which was in the Spike Lee movie School Days. That was his second film. And of course, if you have lived in the D.C. area, that is a go-go song, which is very D.C. And then Glenn Close goes on this extensive lecture about EU, the band, and all the names of the people in it, or the nicknames, and it was weird. It was like, how could she possibly know all this? And then Howery asks her to do the butt, and she gets up, starts twerking. I'm like, what is this show? Despite this spectacle, Glenn Close lost again. She was in the movie Hillbilly Elegy, so she never had a chance this year. That was seen as a Trump-ish movie. Daniel Kaluuya did win Best Supporting Actor for his film Judas and the Black Messiah. Now, when this first came out, I just hated this title right out of the box. The Black Panthers were like Jesus? The FBI informant was like Judas for betraying the Black Panthers. Then I learned that this Black Messiah talk actually came from a memo by longtime FBI director J. Edgar Hoover that they were trying to prevent some Black Messiah from being an important figure on the radical left. Anyway, it must seem poetic in this age of Black Lives Matter Marxism that the Oscars would bow to the Black Panthers. I mean, it's a little dated. I suppose not as dated as doing a movie about Mozart. But, you know, most of the people who are tuning into this broadcast don't remember 1968. I was alive, but I don't remember 1968. Certainly not the other movie, The Trial of the Chicago 7, The Black Panthers. Even the early 70s, that's where I start to kick in there in the early 70s. But this whole history, you know, what next? A movie glamorizing the Weather Underground? This is what you get. Hollywood's going to make films that champion anti-capitalist movements, which is kind of comical because it's like, what on earth are these movie studios? But international conglomerates are parts of international conglomerates. Anyway, in one speech in this movie about the Black Panthers, Kaluuya plays this leader called Fred Hampton. And he tells an emotional crowd that killing one police officer will give them satisfaction. Killing more than one will give them more satisfaction. And killing all police officers will give them complete satisfaction. Gosh, doesn't that sound swell? Does that really sound like the kind of movie that Hollywood should be promoting? Didn't we think Hollywood was the dream factory? You know, Hollywood's uniting the country just in the same way Joe Biden is. And yet, even the Academy of Motion Pictures itself was lovingly tweeting on Monday that Kaluuya said in his acceptance speech about the Black Panthers, "They showed me how to love myself." And the rest of the sentence was, "And with that love, they overflowed it to the Black community and to other communities." So the Black Panthers were all about love. They weren't about robbery, prostitution, violence, radicalism. It just was an odd statement to me. I mean, here's Kaluuya basically giving credit to his parents for having sex and making him. Yeah, couldn't you give your parents some credit for how you learned to love yourself and not credit the Black Panthers? I haven't seen this movie, and I guess I'll play catch up and look at it on Netflix. Now, this Trial of the Chicago 7, that's another movie I haven't seen. Also, it could be seen as glorifying people who wanted to riot at the Democratic Convention in 1968. The movie had 6 nominations for the Oscars and no wins. Isn't that sad? But the end of the show is apparently a disaster. NPR TV critic Eric Deggans tweeted, "The Oscars was going so well, then it snubbed Chadwick Boseman in the last award of the night. No disrespect to winner Anthony Hopkins, who is amazing in The Father, but shrew, what a way to end a show." Deggans did not respond when I tweeted back this morning, "Wait, the Oscars were doing so well, and then it gave an Oscar to an actor you think was amazing?" Obviously, what's going on here is just that you sort of root for your own race. The Oscars were going so well, and then you gave the Oscar to a white guy. And then the Best Actress Award went to a white lady. Movies nobody saw, right? Anthony Hopkins in The Father, haven't seen. Frances McDormand in Nomadland, haven't seen. This is Anthony Hopkins' Oscar number 2, because he won for Silence of the Lambs. For Elizabeth, or for Frances McDormand, it's number 3. Glenn Close is still at 0. But it was, I think, a night where the Oscars were trying very hard to speak to African Americans. There was a lot of African American speakers. The show started with Regina King. Angela Bassett was there. Tyler Perry gave this big speech about meeting in the middle. A lot of conservatives on Twitter like that. And then we had the whole sequence with DeButt and Donna Summer. So, I mean, there was a lot of moments there for African Americans last night. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, obviously the Oscar So White hashtag is something that could not be used. Except, I guess, again, if you're going to obsess over those Best Actor and Best Actress awards. I just wanted to conclude with, I was happy to see Best Animated Feature go to Pixar's Soul. I caught that on Disney Plus. I love jazz, and I love animated films. So this movie had me at hello before I'd even turned it on. This award reminded me I've only seen it once, so I'm going to have to fix that. We'll be back on the track of the Fractured Fact Check after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
All righty. On Thursday, Republicans announced that Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina would offer the Republican response to President Biden's address to Congress. They would call it the State of the Union, but in a president's first year, they just don't. They call it a joint speech to Congress. But for the rest of us, it's kind of a State of the Union. Obviously, this is late this year. This is usually something that happens in February. And they're just getting around to it now. And even now, this speech is going to be like the Oscars. There's not enough capacity. They're not going to put all those vaccinated congressmen right next to each other. The Republicans are going on a retreat, so apparently what you're going to get is Biden giving a speech in front of an overwhelmingly Democrat crowd, which will then be analyzed by a set of overwhelmingly Democratic networks and newspapers. But, you know, a Republican said, we're going to put Senator Tim Scott on. We're going to put a black Republican on to give the response to the president. So that was announced Thursday. By Friday morning, the Washington Post fact checker had jumped into Tim Scott, digging into his story of his own family background. They wanted to see if he was exaggerating his story. Glenn Kessler, their chief fact checker, didn't award any Pinocchios. Usually a flat-out pants-on-fire lie is a 4 Pinocchios. When he's feeling nice, he awards 2 Pinocchios. Joe Biden gets 2. That was like a boo-boo. In this case, he didn't award any. He lamented that Scott was sort of gilding the lily about his grandpa leaving grade school to pick cotton. Turns out that's true. But he was checking a line from Scott's speech for the Republican convention last August. It was a little slow, if you ask me. Kessler concluded, "Scott's cotton to Congress line is missing some nuance, but we are not going to raid his statements. To some extent, Scott may be relying on the memories of his grandfather, not a detailed examination of records." Scott tells a tidy story packaged for political consumption, but a close look shows how some of his family's early and improbable success gets flattened and written out of his biography. So it turns out Scott's great-grandfather owned some land. His grandfather then is pulled out of school in grade school to work the farm to pick cotton. But somehow you're talking about Jim Crow era South Carolina. It's really a strange place for them to be nitpicking unless you consider, oh, whoops, this is a black Republican we are talking about. Now, I was wondering about this timing, so I actually emailed Glenn Kessler over at the Washington Post, and I have learned in previous articles I've written, fact-checking the fact-checker over there, he actually does return answers to your questions. I try to ask respectful questions. I get answers. You can judge whether or not you find them believable. But I see, and you know, what's with the timing of this? Your fact check comes the day after they announced Tim Scott's going to be the speaker for the pseudo State of the Union. And his response was, "You may find this hard to believe, but the timing of this story is coincidental. I first contacted Scott's staff on March 26, providing them with all the documents I collected and the questions that he had. Then he said, about a week ago, I told him I was getting to the point of writing a final version and really wanted to talk to Senator Scott because the goal was to publish soon, sometime in the next week. On last Thursday morning, they informed me he was too busy. So they moved the story out to the copy desk. So he said, just a strange coincidence." Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, they didn't just start the fact check last week. They've been working on it for some time. Maybe they've been working on it since last September or August. But when you spend that kind of time digging into somebody, But you've spent this much time. Why can't you wait another week? If you really want an interview with Senator Scott, why would you rush it to the copy desk, you know, when he says he doesn't have time for you? Now, obviously, it's probably not out of the realm that you, a Republican senator, would tell the Washington Post they're not going to call them back. And you should believe they're not going to call you back. It could be months. And in that case, you go, well, why would I wait then? But obviously, you can say that the timing here within a 24-hour period really suggests somebody there thought it was time for this thing to go up. They wanted it to be right there in the Google results when Tim Scott shows up on television. Oh, I hear he exaggerates his own life story. Well, this is where you look at these things and you say, now, isn't it quite typical that politicians exaggerate their own life stories? Isn't it quite typical, Mr. Kessler, that Democrats exaggerate their own stories? And of course, I went to him and I said, what about Elizabeth Warren? And so Kessler sends back to me, we have given Warren four Pinocchios on many occasions. I can't remember the exact circumstances of Warren and her quote-unquote heritage. It may have started as a vetting of a Scott Brown claim, who she ran against in, 2012. In retrospect, probably not the best way to do it, but you can't go back in time. Well, yes, you can. You just spent years digging around in the 1800s with Tim Scott. When they did actually refer to Elizabeth Warren, when she released her DNA report, all of his attention was on how Trump and the Republican National Committee were characterizing Warren. It was really barely about Warren at all. And so he gave three Pinocchios. He didn't really specify who. He sort of said, well, let's give three Pinocchios all around, which would be three Pinocchios for Trump and for the Republicans. And Kessler even included himself in that. But, I mean, that's half-hearted. He gave only two Pinocchios to Hillary Clinton for telling this preposterous story about how she tried to join the Marines. How many months are you going to spend with that one, Glenn? And we know that the Washington Post has never been this interested with Obama. I mean, let's even just consider Congressman Jim Clyburn of South Carolina, Tim Scott's state. Would they spend several months digging around in Jim Clyburn's family history? I don't really see that happening. They're just not that concerned about the Democrats exaggerating their life story. I mean, Obama in Dreams from My Father. David Marinus wrote a book in 2012. We went into some detail about this in our book, Collusion. In the introduction of this book on Barack Obama, David Marinus of the Washington Post praised the memoir as, quote-unquote, unusually insightful. Sure. And then he added, it is important to say it falls into the realm of literature and not of history and autobiography, and should not be read as a rigorously factual account. Do you get that? An editor at the Washington Post is saying you really can't trust Obama's memoir. It's more literature than nonfiction. And he goes into detail about some of this stuff. You know, that Obama exaggerated this. He made up composite girlfriends in his memoir. He like blurred them together like Bob Woodward. you know, he made up stories about how he looked at himself in the reflection of some elevators, and in the building he's discussing there was no reflective elevators. I mean, this kind of stuff. You know, he was just making up stories. And, you know, Glenn Kessler doesn't seem to be exercised about that. So back then in 2012, Marinus gave an interview to David Gregory at NBC, and he said, Obama told him, you called my book fiction. And he says, I said, no, Mr. President, I complimented it. I called it literature. It's the same thing. It's fiction, and I guess it's literature if you think that his writing's that amazing. And then Miranis explained that Obama kind of allowed that he wasn't really fact-checking his own family history that he was writing about in this memoir. Miranis says, in most cases, he said, you're probably right. Miranis said a lot of the mythology of the family was passed along to him that he didn't check. Like his step-grandfather in Indonesia, he thought died fighting the Dutch in the anti-colonial war. In fact, the man died of a heart attack falling off an ottoman changing the drapes in his living room. You know, that sort of story is something the president did not check. And when I told him the reality of so many of those things, he said, you're probably right. So why is it that the Washington Post is going to choose this moment to suggest that maybe Tim Scott needs to be checked because maybe he's exaggerating what his grandfather did, when you can see quite clearly right here, Barack Obama was given every chance to exaggerate his own life story, and people just let him. When David Miranis's book comes out in 2012, you say, well, usually with a Bob Woodward book, there's a big excerpt. Where is the excerpt of the David Miranis book where he goes into how Obama lies and makes up stuff in his memoir? A very, very best-selling memoir, made him a multi-millionaire. Where does he go into this shocking news that Barack Obama's making stuff up? Well, the story was they published one excerpt of the David Miranis book in the sports section. It was a piece of the book about how much Barack Obama loved basketball in high school. I kid you not. It's right there in the book. And it shows you the extremely elastic way in which the Washington Post decides to cover history and the extremely elastic way they do fact-checking at the Washington Post. This is why you should come to Newsbusters, because we're going to dig this stuff out. Sometimes we even read books these reporters and editors write. We even read Jim Acosta's book. Come to us, because if you don't want to do that, if you don't want to watch disturbing CNN and MSNBC segments, if you're never going to listen to NPR or watch PBS, you just come to Newsbusters and you get updated. Come once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for checking in.